That Mannion's got one. He's got a piece of that too.
Get ready to go inside the ropes like you've never been before and watch the most famous and infamous matches in wrestling history, along with legends of the squared circle. Welcome to the first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Payoff. Welcome to episode number 3 of The Payoff. This is Tom Healy, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Jeffrey Ryan. Jeff, we had another week with a great match on The Payoff. How the hell are you doing?
Man, I am riding high this week, my friend. So we got a great match lined up for today. And, you know, we've just spent the last 2 weeks watching The Payoff take off, and it's been fantastic. So we need to thank you to every one of our listeners and supporters of the show. We couldn't do this without you. You know, we could, but, you know, it'd be sad. And we were really happy to see everyone that's coming out and supporting us and being a fan of the show. And so the biggest ways you can help: subscribe, give us 5 stars, and spread the word. Tell your friends. And so you can always find The Payoff on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Payoff Pod. Tom is on Twitter at Payoff Tom. Myself, I am at Payoff Jeff. Follow us. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And we can't say it enough, but thank you so much for the retweets and the subscriptions and the reviews and telling people about it. It means the world to us. And that's going to be the difference between us being successful at this or not. For those of you that, whether you've started a podcast or a new business or had a project you really cared about, you know that when you're passionate about something and you're working your ass off to do it, that the little things do matter. And you're tracking these things hour by hour and measuring them and hoping and praying or whatever it is that you do. And so for us, we've been paying close attention to all this. And as the tweets come in and as the listener count goes up and as people DM us with interesting opportunities and all that stuff is awesome. So we feed off of it. We appreciate it. And it means so much to it. I guess now that we're in week number 3 of the podcast, we actually have housekeeping items, Jeff. So just a few things. I know. Look at this. We've got some business to take care of. So number one, huge shout out to our man, Conrad Thompson. He has been a big supporter of the show. You may have heard him talking about The Payoff on one of his 37 podcasts. In all seriousness, we sincerely appreciate his endorsement. It means a lot to us. We know that the Podfather's endorsement carries a lot of weight in the wrestling podcast community, and we look forward to supporting his event, StarCast, in a few weeks. We're going to be there. We look forward to meeting everyone, and we're going to really have some fun there. So it's going to be fantastic. Next housekeeping item. We've been getting asked about having a Patreon. We will definitely be kicking one off in August. We're really excited about it. Our concern is that we want it to be a home run right out of the gate. So we're building a bunch of stuff. We're mapping things out. We're making sure that we can over deliver. And ultimately, we want it to be awesome from the start. So when that comes, we'll be announcing it, and we'd certainly love to have you on there. And another item was some sound quality issues from a few of our guests. So when Jeff and I are doing these, you know, we're trying to invest in the best equipment, best internet connection, best environment that we're in. Unfortunately, sometimes with our guests, we just can't help it. You know, I can't talk to Buff Bagwell about his internet connection and run a diagnostic on it in advance. And the reality is that there's going to be weeks where our guests are not perfect, but we're going to do everything we can as best as possible to give them the best setting and make sure that we're using the best connection. So again, we're doing our best in that area. And when we're at StarCast and some of the other upcoming wrestling conventions, Jeff and I are going to do our best to have as many of these interviews live face-to-face with some of the guests and watch our matches with them. So we're hoping that that'll certainly help as well. But we appreciate the feedback and we're doing our best and we'll continue to get better. Final housekeeping item ties in with that, which is if you have feedback, if there's things we can do better, DM us, tweet us, email us, whatever we can do. We're working our asses off to make this as strong of a podcast as possible and something that we as fans would enjoy. So your feedback matters. We read it, we incorporate it, and ultimately we want this show to be a must listen for you every single week. So your feedback matters and is greatly appreciated. Jeff, you want to remind everyone how we do things around here at The Payoff?
Yeah, of course. So we promise to keep this easy for you as a listener as we go into our weekly deep dive of a match every Monday. So here's what we've got for you. Part one, the build. It's just Tom and myself laying the groundwork so you have some context on the significance of the match and what was going on in the wrestling business. We want to help refresh some memories of what was happening or just give you some fresh insight into a match that maybe you've never seen or heard of. Part two, the payoff. It's where we watch a match along with someone. We've heard from Vicky Guerrero. We've heard from Buff Bagwell. And this week is the one and only Magnum TA, Magnum Terry Allen. Just like you, we want to hear from superstars and legends that have a great story to tell, and that's what we hope to bring you. Part three, the aftermath. It's where we break down the outcome of the match and how it played out in future storylines. Maybe the story continued. Maybe it was the end of a long build. Whatever it may have been, we break down what happened after the 1-2-3. And then when we can, we try and give you some reviews from the experts, share our personal thoughts, and then we share our payoff score. So, explain the show. Tom, what else do you got for us?
Great stuff as always, Jeff. As a reminder, we cover one match every single week. We don't talk about the current product. We try to bring you fresh and unique information. And each week, we want this to be fun because we all love wrestling and we use it as an escape to get away from everything else and just be sports entertained. So, a quick recap of our first two episodes, if you have not heard them, and then we're going to talk about why we wanted this for number three. Episode number one was an all-time classic match, Eddie versus Brock, No Way Out 2004, watched along with Vicky Guerrero. It's available in the archives. Episode number two is what we call an infamous match, Buff Bagwell, Canyon, Judy Bagwell on a pole at WCW New Blood Rising 2000. Again, available in the archives. So here we are, episode number three. We chose this because it is an all-time iconic classic from a long time ago. And it's got some fascinating things going on, both during the build before the match, certainly during the payoff of the feud, and then in the aftermath as well. And we were so excited to do a deep dive into this match with Magnum TA against Holly Blanchard, Starrcade 1985. It's their famous I Quit Steel Cage match. And man, does this one hold up to the test of time all these years later? So we thought it would be a fantastic match for you. Some of you may have been alive for it. Many of you probably weren't. And we think you're really going to enjoy us talking about it here today and certainly working with Magnum. So Jeff, what are your quick thoughts on why we chose this match as we head into the build?
Yeah, his name came up as one of the first names when you and I were discussing starting this. And so that was a big part of it. But then I also just love a great psychological struggle in the ring that is only enhanced with the actual wrestling. You know, I think of Flair and Steamboat as just like the banner example of kind of this just in-ring and out-of-ring struggle. Even more recently, like Okada and Kenny Omega and New Japan and the matches they had and just the storytelling that happening and the psychology, it just, you're enthralled. You want to know what's happening next, both in the ring, out of the ring, whatever it might be. You can't wait to see what happens. And so I don't want to spoil any more of my thoughts, but I say let's just jump right into the build.
Yep, this is the build. This is where we set the stage of what's going on leading into the payoff for the week. Starrcade, 1985. This is the third annual Starrcade. Now, this is back in the closed circuit television days, and it's being promoted by Jim Crockett Promotions under the National Wrestling Alliance banner. So this is pre-WCW. The main event of this show is Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And that's the feud that escalated when Flair broke Rhodes' ankle back in September. Now, what's interesting about this event is it had two venues, the Greensburg Coliseum, which is in Greensboro, North Carolina, and then the Omni Coliseum, which is in Atlanta, Georgia. This particular match took place in Greensboro. Now, previous Starrcade events had been held in the Greensboro Coliseum. This was the first to be expanded and held in two locations. And what they did was it was on closed circuit in whatever building the matches weren't taking place in. So they basically ping-ponged back and forth between the two venues. Now, I remember WrestleMania 2 doing this between three venues, but this actually took place first, and it was in two locations. WrestleMania 2, for those that remember, took place in three locations. That was done in April of 1986, about 5 months after this. Now, you can only assume the young Vince McMahon had a bit of a chip on his shoulder and said, "God damn it, pal, we're going to stick it to the guys down south, and we're going to do ours at three locations." But again, what made this Starrcade even more complicated from a logistics standpoint is they ping-ponged back and forth throughout the show, as opposed to WrestleMania 2 later on that would go from New York to Chicago to Los Angeles, but they were not going back and forth between matches. So I found that to be really interesting. This took place on November 28th, 1985. Between the two venues, 30,000, which means people were probably hanging from the rafters, as Gorilla Monsoon used to state. So now that we've set the stage for things, Jeff, how did we get to Magnum TA, Tully Blanchard, steel cage with an I quit stipulation?
Yeah, I will take us back now to 1985. For starters, let's take a look at Tully Blanchard. Blanchard had been having a back and forth with Dusty Rhodes that went on through early, mid-1985. Blanchard's almost year-long reign as the NWA TV champion ended when Dusty beat him that March. Blanchard would eventually win it back, but then lose it again to Dusty that summer in their own steel cage match, which was at the first Great American Bash. Dusty would go on to battle Ric Flair. We could talk about that a different day, but Magnum and Blanchard were battling the summer of 1985. Blanchard had been around for a while, but Magnum was just becoming a hit after signing with NWA. He had a nearly 30-minute match with Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight title, which he lost. But afterwards and along the way to this match, he did win the U.S. Heavyweight title. So these guys wrestled a lot in 1985. Blanchard had always said he remembers just wrestling pretty much every night the two of them were in the ring together doing what they did. To set the stage for this match, Blanchard won the U.S. title from Magnum, so he was in possession of the strap heading into this match. There was a lot of back and forth, but Blanchard had the belt. To give you an idea, I'm going to say Blanchard was hated, and that's probably an understatement. Blanchard was absolutely despised by the fans. You know, we talk about faces and heels nowadays. He was a heel in every sense of the word, and he played the role exceptionally well. This was a time before social media and the internet and having some of that stuff. So you just knew he was a terrible person. There was no other way to cut it at the time that Tully Blanchard was bad. And that was it. But on the flip side, Magnum TA was loved by the fans, just absolutely adored. He had that classic 80s, as I say, the feathered hair, just a beefy mustache. There's no other way to put it. He just had the look. And so fans adored him no matter where he went. And so many have probably heard the story, but if not, it's always been told that Andre the Giant was actually the one that thought he looked like Tom Selleck, who was Magnum PI, which is how he ended up with the Magnum ring name. Me personally, I'm a little too young to remember the Magnum PI hype since that show ran through most of the 80s, but I get it too. So from everything I can find in Twitter, you know, please let me know if I'm wrong. I'm sure you will. But while this was not the first steel cage match, it was the first I quit match. And not just for these guys, but for any promotion. This was the first time they ever did a match like this. So We don't see this stipulation much anymore. Most recently, 205 Live actually has done it in 2017. The last time it was on the main card, you have to go back to a younger Jonathan Cena versus Rusev in 2015. So it's just not something we see a whole lot. The rules of this one, though, over the years, they just haven't changed much. Fairly straightforward, and no pinfalls, no countouts, no disqualification, and the first participant to say, "I quit," loses, plain and simple. So I was only about 18 months old when this match happened. So luckily, there's a lot of info out there already about this one. But Tom, I know you had a couple thoughts too.
Well, you know, I was going to call into question your statistic about this being the first I quit match ever. So when you were speaking, I looked it up. And according to Wikipedia, this was in fact the first I quit match. Now, it's on Wikipedia, so it has to be true because anyone can post anything on the internet. So you're getting the best possible information. But we'll see. Again, Twitter will correct us if we're wrong. Now, as always, you hit a home run. You walked us through how we got to this match. A couple other items I'll throw on for a little bit of color here. This is the blow off in a major feud, right? So I love when you just get to what you know is going to be the finale, the end, and then they throw in a major stipulation. Now, these days, people wrestle in a Hell in a Cell because it happens to be the next pay-per-view, or we think we're getting a blow-off at a WrestleMania, then we get it again at a SummerSlam. So it just begs the question of when you're watching a match, are you ever actually getting the end of a feud? Because some of these feuds never seem to end, or they seem to go to a blow-off before it really fits the storyline. So they had a match in Greensboro that went to a time limit draw. Tully uses it as an excuse to say Magnum could never have another title shot. Magnum then challenges him to one final match, an I quit match inside a steel cage where nobody could interfere, nobody can make excuses. And of course, Tully, the dastardly heel, tries to dodge him. So the NWA Executive Committee ultimately overrules this. They sign the match into place. Now, another big thing that sticks out to me as we talk about the build to this match is it was your true major heel against your major babyface. Tully was hated. Magnum was loved. So I think that's something that we miss in today's product, where you could argue it's because kayfabe's dead or because society's different, or possibly you see these guys and girls on social media and they're all best buds in real life. I don't know what it is, but the point is that at this time, Tully was absolutely hated. Magnum was absolutely loved. So you get that dynamic, then you put them into an incredible storyline and you've got magic. You've got magic storytelling as we build up to this match. Now, you're going to hear me say this plenty of times here on The Payoff. I was a New York guy growing up. I watched the WWF. I went to the WWF shows growing up in Pittsburgh. So some of this NWA and WCW stuff that we're covering, it's relatively unknown to me. And so I knew Magnum TA was a big star, but I didn't realize how popular he was. And so one of the things I saw in my research was 1985, he's the second most popular wrestler to Hulk Hogan in Pro Wrestling Illustrated's poll. Now, Tully was the third hated back in 84. So again, highly popular, highly disliked. And you have that contrast for the fans. Another thing I saw in my research was that in 1984, which was the year before this match takes place, Magnum TA was the second most improved wrestler in the PWI poll. So obviously he was trending upwards to being a massive star, and it was happening relatively quickly. Now, if you can't tell, Jeff, I'm a big mark for the old school PWI rankings and awards. That's why I'm so excited for one of our upcoming guests. Hint, hint to all our listeners. Now, here we go. Now's your opportunity. It's time for the payoff. For those of you that want to watch along with Magnum TA, log into the WWE Network, go to Starrcade 1985. It's in the WCW pay-per-view section along with the other Starrcades. We're going to hit play at 1 hour and 30 minutes as soon as you hear the bell ring when I'm done talking. So again, 1 hour and 30 minutes. When you hear that bell ring, hit play. For those of you that are in the car, at the office, maybe you're at the gym, don't worry about it. You're still going to enjoy hearing all about the match, and you can always go back in later. So again, for those watching at home with Magnum TA, 1 hour, 30 minutes, Starrcade 1985. Hit play when the bell rings. We hope you enjoy. And with that being said, it's time for The Payoff. All right, we are here with Magnum TA. Look at that stud that's on the screen. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Tom. I'm ready for this thing. I'm not seeing the picture yet, though. You might want to.
Yeah, we're going to share the screen with you, and we are good to go. So I got to ask you, I mean, here we are all these years later. We're still talking about this I Quit match. It's extremely famous. People are probably still coming up to you and asking you about it. So tell everyone, what did this match mean to you at the time, and what does it mean to you now all these years later?
Well, at the time we had it, it was just a blow-off match. I mean, when I say just a blow-off match, he and I had been fighting each other all over the country literally for 8 months. Because in the same building that I had won the U.S. title from Wahoo, he had stolen the title from me with the assistance of Baby Doll coming out, handing him a roll of quarters, and he knocked me out and took the title. And the heat and the battles that ensued after that were epic. So it all came to the culmination of this match to, you know, almost end all matches, the I Quit match, that was such a brutal match that you couldn't win by pinfall. He couldn't win by submission. The person had to literally say, I quit. I don't want any more. And I had never been in anything like this, but I'd heard about it from, you know, some of the old timers in the business. And we knew that it was going to be just intense and action packed, brutal. And again, it was all improvisational, off the cuff. We had no guideline about how we were going to go about doing whatever until we got to the conclusion of it. And as you said, 30 some years later, people talk about it like it made such an impact on them, and they've shown their kids and their grandkids, and it's just crazy how it's taken on a life of its own.
How much went into this match in terms of planning, and how much of this was just the two of you feeling out the crowd and just making it happen in the ring?
The entire match was just like the matches he and I were accustomed to have. It was a battle. It was a fight. It was just a toe-to-toe battle. We had no discussion about it prior to it whatsoever. And we obviously knew the conclusion of the match. We knew we were going to have some kind of object or something that we were going to use on the end of it, but we didn't even know what that was going to be at the time. And that's really kind of a classic thing about this whole thing, because it ended up being such a dastardly looking weapon we end up having at the end of this thing, that we couldn't have written a script and come up with the way this thing worked out any more epic if we tried.
Is this the favorite match of your career?
It's got to be one of them. I mean, I have talked about it and seen it so many times, it's almost kind of surreal. It was a lot of fun because the people were just going crazy, and Greensboro was sold out. It was being watched live also in Atlanta, the Atlanta Omni. We were going back and forth. We'd have a live match, then they'd have a live match, and everybody's watching it up on a big screen overhead. So it was a very electric night all the way around. Did I know it was going to be the epic thing that it's become? Absolutely not. I mean, to me, it was the kind of performance and the kind of competition that he and I were accustomed to having every time we got in the ring together.
And who were your favorite guys that you ever worked with?
It would have to be, you know, Tully, Rick, and Nikita, from the standpoint of the epic things that happened there. My last match was actually with Jimmy Garvin, and had he and I got to take that to fruition and play that out some more, Jimmy was a real joy to work with too. That got cut short, obviously, because of the career-ending accident that I had. But I mean, I had some great people that I was able to share the ring with, from Harley Race to Dory Funk Jr. to Hacksaw Butch Reed, Mr. Wrestling too, the Midnight Express. I mean, just a lot of incredible talent.
Do you ever think about where you would have ended up and what would have happened in your career had the accident not happened?
Well, the world title was next. I mean, it had already been discussed and agreed upon, and all the parties involved that needed to say yes had said yes. And what people don't know is that though wrestling was my passion, and winning the world's title was definitely my goal and something I wasn't going to be satisfied till I did it, I wanted to have a year run, maybe a 2 year run back and forth with somebody with the belt. And I had the opportunity to drive a NASCAR back when I was wrestling. I got to drive Benny Parsons' car at Charlotte Motor Speedway. That was like one of the biggest rushes I've ever had in my life. And I liked it so much that Hal Needham, who owned the car, was wanting to send me to Buddy Baker's driving school. And this was before Jeff Gordon and all these guys that came through NASCAR later on. They were looking for a young guy to groom in NASCAR to be a big draw. And there was a huge similar audience between wrestling and NASCAR. So really, my hope was to win the title, hold the title, have a run with it, and by the time I was 30, retire from wrestling and go drive race cars.
Yeah, I'd never heard that before. Do you think that at some point you would have ended up in New York, or was that just not something on your radar?
Well, it wasn't on my radar simply because they were treating me like a king. And we were going head-to-head with Vince in all the major venues, and we were drawing record crowds. So it would have had to been something shifted in the landscape. I would have had to seen the Crockett's organization slipping or not being able to keep up with what the industry was capable of supporting to have made that move. But to me, it was a business. You know, I love Dusty, and I would have never left Dusty high and dry, but I could see Dusty and I both having gone together under the right set of circumstances, because we'd want to be on the grandest stage of them all, and WrestleMania, you know, obviously became that. And I don't know whether the organization the Crockett's had would have ever had the capacity to grow the way Vince was able to grow his business if things had been different.
I understand what you're saying, because right around this time or not long after it, there's however many, 80, 90, 100,000 people in the Pontiac Silverdome. So it still was the show, right? I mean, it still was the big time. So as an athlete, as a performer, you always want to be on the biggest stage you possibly can be.
Well, yeah. And if you watch my character, I was on the verge of that attitude before the era thing, before Vince ever thought of it, because I had already knocked out Bob Geigel, the president of the NWA, because he insulted my mom. And then I got stripped of the U.S. title. So they were allowing me to be a rough kind of lone wolf babyface that was different than anybody else. The only ally I really had was Dusty, and Dusty was kind of an outlaw. So we kind of danced on that fine line. We were definitely the fan favorites, but we were pretty rough and tumble too. And we were getting more and more like that the more opportunity we had. I turned Jimmy Garvin's wife over my knee in the middle of the ring and spanked her pretty good on one of the angles him and I were working. And I got to do some pretty outlandish things, and that would have only continued to have gone in that direction had I had the opportunity.
Well, let me ask you something. I don't know, maybe you've been asked this before. I've never heard it asked of you, but were you Stone Cold Steve Austin before Stone Cold Steve Austin?
You know, it's a really good possibility that I laid those bricks in that road for him, because that was the character that I was comfortable in. I wasn't to the point of standing up on the turnbuckle and flipping off the crowd, but I was pretty in your face, hard nosed, draw a hard line kind of character. And even though I wrestled some monsters, always guys bigger than me, I mean, I was 245 pounds and in pretty decent shape, I could take a beating, I could give a beating. And I really liked this match, you know, that was more like a brawl. I really enjoyed that more than the backdrops and drop kicks and all that stuff. I liked the brawling side of it more so than the technical, skilled, pretty wrestling like Ricky Steamboat did.
Well, and that's what makes a good card, is you get a little bit of everything. And the ironic part is, I mean, you're doing those types of things, but you were a babyface your entire career. So you mentioned Dusty Rhodes. Two questions for you. Number one, how close were you to Dusty, and what was that relationship like? And number two, tell us about your relationship with his son.
Well, Dusty was my best friend in life. We were tied at the hip. We met down in Florida, and when I was on the underneath to the middle of the card, and we traveled together and sang and talked about our dreams and things we wanted to do. We just formed this crazy bond. And when he had the book for the Crockett's and had this opportunity there, I mean, I left Bill Watts when that territory was on fire. I was his top star, and I left to go help my friend Dusty turn, you know, the Mid-Atlantic around and the NWA into what we did with it. And I believed in him, and I believed in what he and I could do together. So, you know, I was there when Cody was born, and I'm Cody's real godfather. I was there when he was christened, and we just had a really, really special thing that, you know, I've never had in any other setting with somebody that wasn't family.
So I want to get back to your relationship with Cody and what he's up to now, but let's get back to the match for a second here. I mean, it obviously looks stiff as hell and brutal. I mean, was it just like any other day at the office for you, or was this one, were you a little sore when you woke up the next day?
No, this was just like, this was another day at the office. It's just like the Roadrunner and the Coyote. we had gone out and done our thing, and this is what we did, and this is how we made it a living.
Well, and to tell people, because at this time, you were going like this, whether the lights were on and it was on television or not. Is that correct?
Well, and that's the thing. And Tully and I have talked about this in front of panels and stuff. We had countless matches as brutal as this, if not more so, that was in front of a high school gym with 2,000 people in it. We did this no matter what size or what venue we were in. We had fought like this all over the entire country. So it was like him and I didn't have to say a word. We knew each other so well. It was like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. We knew each other's moves. You know, I was a snug wrestler at best. I mean, because I came from that school of, I didn't care what happened on the whole rest of the card. When people walked out of the building, I wanted them to know they'd seen a fight when they'd seen me. And Tully was the same way. So him and I just, we let it all hang out and went for it. So here's the moment right here. That chair wasn't planted. Baby Doll was just looking for something to throw in the ring. She threw it over that ring. And see that hinge that broke off of that chair? It looked like a metal spike that Hollywood came up with. And that just ended up being the ultimate prop. I said that if anybody had any idea and saved that thing, it'd be worth $100,000.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember at the time, what did everyone else think that was on the card? Because this was in the middle of the show. Were they like, man, you just made it a tough act to follow? Or was that just the way it was?
Well, see, the deal was we were supposed to be the main event in Greensboro. Dusty was the main event in Atlanta. They moved us to the middle of the card because Dusty wanted me to get to Atlanta before the end of his match. They had an airplane waiting for me. I literally didn't even take a shower or anything. I wiped my head off, threw my clothes on, jumped in a limo, bolted to the airport, had a private plane waiting, took me off and jetted me to Atlanta to try to make it there before the match was over. We missed it. But that, yeah, this in the middle of the card, I don't know who followed it, but I'm sure it wasn't very pleasant.
So both a limo driver and a pilot on a private plane had you get into their respective vehicles still bloody and sweaty.
Yeah, but they had plenty of cold beer on the plane. And it was all good.
That's great. This is just unbelievable. So let's get back to Dusty and Cody for a second. So Cody obviously is doing some incredible things, All Elite Wrestling. What do you think Dusty would think of what Cody's doing now?
Oh, he'd be so proud of him because he mentored his son and invested so much into him that Cody has just been groomed to be where he's at, do what he's doing. And he's got a brilliant mind. His talent as a performer is amazing, but more amazing is that entrepreneurial spirit that he has and his ability to be a visionary and see things like his dad did through a different set of lenses. So he's got that unique touch that's so special. And you know, I can't wait to see what they do. I mean, they've made a lot of noise with, I've been to their first two big events, the one in Chicago and the one in Vegas, and the events were amazing. And I'm just really interested to see what kind of product they're able to produce when they start doing episodic television on the Turner station every week and see what that looks like. Cause it's going to be a challenge. Doing a big show and putting together a great big production is exciting, and bringing all that talent together and then going out there and doing it week after week with storylines and lots of different folks and the things that can go wrong and people can get hurt and all those kind of things is a real big challenge. So I'm excited to see what they do. I think JR being with them is going to be a tremendous asset for them, and they've got some good people around them. So I'm excited to see what the future holds for that whole organization.
Do you think that, in some funny way, that Dusty's proud of the fact that he's competing against Vince versus going to work for him again?
I think he would, because, you know, it's funny, but for Dusty and I, it was always a war. We had this mentality, you know, it was like the North against the South kind of thing. You know, Vince up there in the ivory towers and we down there in North Kakalaki with the Crockett's and going toe-to-toe in all these major cities. And Dusty loved that competition. He loved it when we'd go to Baltimore or Philly and they'd be in the same town, same night, and we'd be head to head going after it. So you know, I think he would be loving it. And it's just, it's good for the business. You know, back in the day, you know, Dusty was a huge Boston Celtics fan. And we used to just go round and round with Rick because he was a Lakers fan. And we just loved that competition. And we viewed the WE kind of like the same thing. It wasn't that they were bad. It wasn't, it was a bad organization. It was just competition.
It's fascinating. It's unbelievable what they're doing, and it'll be fun to watch. So, and I think you can certainly attest to this, but competition in this business, it's good for the fans, it's good for the wrestlers, it's good for the backstage folks. I mean, it's just good for everyone, and it brings out the best in everyone. Is that right?
Well, it makes more jobs and makes more opportunities. It's somewhere for the young talent to go where they're not just, you know, killing themselves with all these indie little shows and bars and this and that and the other, trying to eke out a living. It's just good all the way around, because the territories all got put out of business in the 80s. When I broke in, there was territories everywhere from coast to coast and Hawaii and New Zealand and everything else. And when Vince and the Crockett started flexing their muscles and building these super shows, nobody could compete with them. And it was a tough thing, because then you lost that proving grounds for all the young talent to learn the craft, learn their trade, and then step into the big show. There was nowhere for the young Funks and the young Harley Races and the young Magnums. And where were we going to come from if we didn't have that platform?
Yep, absolutely. Well, hey, it was great having you here. It was fun watching this match. We certainly appreciate all the insight. Probably hurts a little bit every time you watch it, but we appreciate having you here on The Payoff.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
So I have to start by thanking Magnum TA for being just such an awesome guest and spending some time chatting with us. We got more in store for him on later episodes, but this match, just phenomenal. No other way to put it. So, the aftermath. I said it before our interview, but I will always get behind in-ring psychology. I think the best part of this match is it was a slobber knocker. There's no other way to put it. These guys just beat the hell out of each other. You got blood, weapons, chair shots, chair that eventually turned into a wooden spike shot, using the microphone. This is so cool to me. Using the microphone to hit your opponent, and then trying to get him to say, "I quit," with said microphone. Just genius. We don't see anything like that anymore. And so they did 15 minutes in the ring telling a story with just twists and turns that it survived for nearly 35 years. It's endured for 35 years. So reviewing what happened after this match, Tully went on to help form a small group, Four Horsemen, just a small faction that him and a few guys came together to form after that. And so, you know, they got together. So that's what Tully was doing.
See, I can see you smiling. Let's make sure our listeners at home know you're kidding. We don't need to get blasted on Payoff or on Twitter. Ah, these morons don't even know the Four Horsemen. Can you believe that? So yeah, he was laughing. It was sarcasm, just to clear that up.
I am aware. Yes. Okay. So Tully went on and did, yes, it was the Four Horsemen. Magnum, though, had a long run with the belt. It was then vacated because of some storylines. But then he started feuding with Nikita Koloff, which turned into a best of seven series for the vacant U.S. title belt. Magnum had to come back. He was down, but they ended up going through all seven matches. Unfortunately, it resulted Magnum did lose, but only because the storyline behind the scenes had him looking at bigger things. He was supposed to dethrone the one and only Ric Flair and become the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. So fortunately, and we'll talk about it a little bit, life derailed that a little bit, though.
Well, and I did hear a little rumor that a certain podcast might be covering that best of seven series at some point down the line, because it was fantastic. Jeff, you made some great points, as always. A few other things I found fascinating. So I didn't realize that the chair wasn't some pre-planned prop, but it was more of just, hey, we need to use a weapon. The weapon turned into the chair, and then the chair turned into having this iconic spike on it. So that was pretty cool how that all worked out to be so iconic. And I don't even know if they could have planned anything more dramatic than that. You know, the other thing too is some of the things that we attribute as being revolutionary or happening for the first time in the Attitude Era, Magnum TA knocking out an authority figure, getting stripped of the title. And I had never heard this before or thought of this before, but I just said, you were Stone Cold Steve Austin before Stone Cold Steve Austin was. And I don't know, maybe we do this in all forms of entertainment, but I think oftentimes we see something that we love and we just assume or want to believe that it was the first time to ever happen or be done. The reality is that ECW didn't invent table bumps. Steve Austin wasn't the first guy to challenge the authority. WrestleMania 10 didn't have the first ever ladder match. Hell, Facebook wasn't the first social network, you know? Like, all these things are great, but I do really love to acknowledge trailblazers and not just what we think happened. And so Magnum TA, whether it was him that created this stuff or he just executed it flawlessly and other people came up with some of the creative behind it, but it was trailblazing and it was awesome. It really made the build to this so incredible. And so I just want to acknowledge him for that. Another thing, and look, I've heard this in other interviews with other wrestlers and with Magnum, how he worded it was, well, this was just another day at the office. And I mean, you think about what these guys put them through and they were saying, hey, we were doing this in high school gyms 6-7 nights a week. And sometimes twice in one day, and they were doing the blood and they were beating the hell out of each other. And in some cases, those were hour-long matches. And so it's just hard to believe you watch this and you're like, man, they really went all out. And no, that just happened to be on television, but they were doing that to each other every single night. And as he said, it was just another day at the office. I also thought it was interesting. He tried to make it to Atlanta for the end of the Dusty versus Flair match. I just had this image of this big jacked up guy, maybe shirtless, definitely sweaty, blood still on his face, getting into a limo and then getting into a private plane. It's not exactly the type of clientele that you typically associate with those modes of transportation. Also some great nuggets in there about his godson, Cody Rhodes, what he's up to now. Really loved having the opportunity to ask him about what Dusty would think now and some of the parallels between Dusty being anti-New York and anti-establishment and what his son's doing now. Jeff, I know there wasn't a ton of information out there about this match and how it was received at the time, but tell us a little bit more about what you were able to find and really about the aftermath to this match.
Yeah, like you said, I couldn't find a ton of reviews or write-ups about this match that were written at the time because there just hasn't been a whole lot of tracking that's been happening since then. There is more recent articles that were written after the fact, but like they didn't start till 1987. So for this match, there wouldn't have been anything. All I could find, I dug a little bit, was a local newspaper out of Greensboro, and it said, I quote, Magnum TA defeated Tully Blanchard to win the U.S. title in the main event of Starrcade 85 at the Greensboro Coliseum Thursday night, end quote. So, like you said, it was just another day of wrestling, you know? It wasn't a thing. It was just how it was. And so not a ton on the match, but do have a lot to discuss just about what happened with Magnum TA.
Yeah, and we love talking about how the match was received at the actual time and if it had a star rating or any major takeaways kind of in the moment right afterwards. And I wish there was more out there about this match, but obviously it has been covered since and has certainly held up the test of time. You know, as Jeff alluded to earlier, and some of you may not know this or maybe too young, but Magnum TA was on his way to being a world champion. And then less than a year after this epic I Quit match, the date was actually October 14th of 1986, he was involved in a car accident. He was driving his Porsche hydroplaned into a telephone pole about 5 minutes from his house, very poorly lit street. He was going the speed limit. It was just one of those terrible, terrible, uncontrollable accidents. Ultimately left him with a broken back, a diagnosis that he would never walk again and certainly never wrestle again. He would have been a major, major player in wrestling for as long as he wanted to be. Who knows where he would have ended up, but he would have been a multi-time world champion. He would have continued to get better and better at his craft. And it's sad that we weren't able to see that as fans. But more importantly, it's sad that a really good guy in the business had such a tragic accident. The important part of all this is he's living a wonderful life. He's got a great family. He's got a great job and a great career. He's just an overall happy guy. You see this in all walks of life. I don't want to pick on pro wrestlers when I say this, but you know, there's people that have bad circumstances or tragic accidents. And they don't recover from them and they feel like a major victim and they resort to drug and alcohol issues and they're never able to get past what happens. And for those that have heard Magnum on different interviews or have had a chance to see his documentary or have met him at one of the wrestling conventions, you know, he's just a very upbeat, optimistic, friendly, warm person. And I can't imagine going through what he went through, but still enjoying the business, still watching wrestling, and still reflecting so positively on the experiences he's had. So I think ultimately, Jeff, it's a testament to him being a absolutely fantastic person. And it was such a pleasure to be able to talk to him and have him on the show. And I can't wait for us to be able to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we do pick it up a little bit here, as we do every episode of The Payoff, instead of kind of ranking just the overall match quality or giving it stars, we're going to give you our 1 through 10 payoff score. We incorporate the storylines, the build, the crowd, really just whatever we feel is important. It's not scientific. Disclaimer, Tom and I, while we prepare our notes for the show and we do a little bit separate and a little bit together, we do not discuss our score ahead of time. And so neither of us kind of know what we're getting into. But I will kick us off. I'm setting the bar high. I understand that there's going to be some expectations with this one moving forward, but I am giving this a 10. You know, I've been kind of all over the place, you know, our previous matches, but watching this match and just kind of analyzing it and looking into it like we had to, I just can't find any fault in how fantastic this match was. It had a little bit of everything that I want to see, just with its actual build and kind of everything in the months leading up to it and what they were trying to achieve. The actual match itself was just, it's even hard to call it wrestling because they just beat the hell out of each other. And it was fantastic. And then after, both of them kind of went their separate ways, but still successful, still out there doing what needs to be done. And it was just, overall, I have to give it a 10 because I think anything less than that is a disservice. And so it's a high mark kind of out of the gate this early, but you know what? I'm going to stick with it. There's great matches out there, and this is definitely one of them. So Tom, how about your score?
Well, I just want to reiterate something, and I think it's important, and Jeff, you know, mentioned it, which is, you know, we're not necessarily looking at, oh, this was a 5-star spot fest, incredible, but we're looking at a more holistic picture. And so we're looking at the build of what got us to that match. We're looking at the payoff of what happened during that match. And then, you know, to a certain degree, we're thinking about the aftermath and how that historically fits into things. So with that being said, you know, and Jeff, I feel bad, but I only had it at a 9. And, you know, we don't consult with each other before we throw out these numbers. I wasn't sure what you were going to come in with. I don't even know what would get me to a 10 because this was pretty damn close to perfect. And I think to your point, we do the analyzing. We look at everything. We really study things. We go back and watch whatever we can find. We do a lot of homework outside of just watching the actual match. And all those things combined are going to take us to some different scores. There's going to be 5-star matches where we just didn't think the build was that great. Or there's going to be matches that were okay, but we just love the whole story and everything that went into it. So with that being said, again, I don't know when I'm going to get to a 10. I can think of some classic matches, but you know, I'd have to really go back and be swayed by the build to get me to a 10. I love this. I think you've been able to hear my enthusiasm throughout the show. I love the build to this. I think it's great to see when that true blow off of a feud happens and it's done at the right time. They incorporated violence, but they did it in a way where it was awesome and iconic and fit the storyline as opposed to just using violence for the sake of violence. Overall, I just think it hammers home why you and I started the payoff, right? Why did we start this podcast? We wanted to do the deep dive into a match. We wanted to highlight the payoff of these various situations in the business, right? And some of them are going to be famous and classic and incredible. Some of them are going to be infamous. Some of them, you know, are just going to be these wild things that happened. But we just love studying all of it and giving you our thoughts and presenting a bunch of interesting information. So we love doing the deep dive into the culmination of all these crazy things that happen in the wrestling business. And this one was the payoff to just an awesome rivalry. And it had so many elements that make wrestling great. And I don't even argue some elements that we miss in today's product. So yeah, Jeff, you know, put me down for a 9. We're not off by much. You gave it the perfect score. We obviously both thought it was fantastic. So with that being said, just some closing thoughts here. As we approach the finish, again, I just want to thank Magnum TA for being such a fantastic guest, sharing some great information with us, being willing to spend time with us. I absolutely cannot wait for us to have him back on some future episodes, and I know we'll have plenty more to discuss. Jeff, any final thoughts from you as we head to the finish on this week's episode?
Yeah, I want to make sure just to plug his DVD. It's I Never Quit, the Magnum TA story. I say DVD because I couldn't find Blu-ray. It's not streaming anywhere either, but I encourage you, we will have some future episodes with Magnum, but this is one where if you want more now, I highly encourage you to kind of look that one up. It's the I Never Quit, the Magnum TA story. So
yeah, and it's, and Jeff, I'll just say, man, it is absolutely gut-wrenching. We'll make sure to post something on social media with a link as well in case you can't find it, but it is just a gut-wrenching, fantastic documentary, and I think you'll really enjoy it and learn a lot from it.
Yeah, and you know, and just kind of with that, you know, nothing that we haven't already said, it was just an all-around great match, great storytelling. It's like we've said it before, if you want to give someone an example of a match of what wrestling should be, this is one of them, you know, and just everything that was surrounding it. So just great to kind of revisit this one. So thanks for joining us. Episode 3. Don't forget, we will post a teaser on social media every Sunday, and then we will make sure that you have a new episode of The Payoff every Monday when you wake up. So if you like what we're hearing and you want...
Well, you know what, Jeff? You know, we got to be careful because, you know, and we've talked about this. We have a ton of listeners that are outside of North America. Don't forget that. We've got a ton of people in the UK listening. We've got a bunch of you in Australia. We've got a couple in New Zealand. Big shout out to all of you too. So you'll have it Monday as well. The times are just all over the place because I guess we... have international listeners, Jeff, which who would have thought, man? How cool is that?
We're global, my friend. That's the way to do it. So for all of your friends, no matter where you are, if you like what you're hearing, you want more, we keep it simple. Like we said, we just want you to subscribe, give us those 5 stars, and then spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, spouse, partner, dog, everyone. Just let everyone know. And make sure that you like and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Payoff Pod. So episode 3 in the bag. Feeling good, Tom. This is another great one. So thank you for joining us, everybody, on The Payoff.